Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 115 is once again being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. I feel like I just slurred veterinary. Like, one of my big pet peeves is veterinary, and I kind of said veterinary. So, veterinary there.
Perfect. Okay. Well, more importantly, welcome back.
Well, thank you. I really, I listened in on your episode while I was gone last week. Thank you for doing that. I know it's always a bit awkward, maybe, doing these things by yourself.
It's definitely super weird doing it all by yourself. I had a couple of retakes, and we had changed our, what would we call her, sound engineer.
Yep.
We had a change there, and so there's a little bit of a blip last week, so yeah. Do apologize for that. But
a couple repeats. We'll get it worked out, though.
Certainly.
We'll get it worked out.
But yeah, for sure. It's definitely weird to sit here and talk to yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Was it just too busy to have somebody come on? You recorded it morning of that Monday, right?
No, I'm pretty sure I came in here on Sunday.
That's right.
Yeah, and so we have been super, super busy. So I don't think that it's feasible at all to pull someone off the floor and bring them up unless someone wanted to come in, and I didn't really ask.
You should have had your mom come on the show.
Oh, God.
I'm just now thinking about this. Your dad, too. I mean, certainly invite both of them. That would have been a hoot to hear you three discussing the news
of
the day.
Yes, of course. Yep.
So once again, this is July 4th. We are recording this for broadcast on the 5th from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia. Absolutely gorgeous. Sunshine, a few clouds in the sky. What? Low 80s, just perfect.
Yeah.
Very low humidity for us. Probably
it's been kind of a weird summer that way. I gave the weather report last week, as you heard.
Yeah.
Kind of sticking true to tradition for you. But yeah, it's been kind of weird because I feel like usually we're up in the high 90s. We're in the hundreds in this part of the summer.
Yeah.
And it's been somewhat nice.
It has been nice, which means something's coming, whether it's a hurricane or blistering heat and drought. Super, super green around here.
Very green, for sure. My grass, we got a grass cut every week, and it's you can't even tell.
Yeah. So, glad to be back in the States. So,
real quick, I do hope that everyone had a great 4th of July. Happy Independence Day. We, on our social media posts, we made a comment yesterday and I guess Friday, Saturday, and even Sunday about keeping your pets safe over July 4th. And we didn't really talk too much about that on the podcast. I didn't talk at all about it last week, and we didn't talk too much about it on the podcast before. But yes. Hopefully everyone has, safe pets and they've had a safe, happy 4th.
This is after the fact, to your point.
Right.
And so I was going to mention it. Because July 4th is really happening tonight with all the issues. But yes, lots of anxiety and phobias in pets with fireworks, thunderstorms, other types of things. And so
keep your pets inside if you...
Yeah, my understanding is this is the day of the year where more pets go missing due to escape from their owners than any other day that we see. And it's related directly to the fireworks, and maybe we're outside barbecuing, whatever. People do pay attention to their pets, but maybe people are coming and going, gates are opening and closing.
Yeah.
But it's really related to, in my opinion, the fear of the noise of the fireworks and the big booms.
But so you're, I guess, assuming that that's going to be like a celebration at your house, but a lot of people actually go to celebrations and take their pets with them. And so the pet is now in a weird environment, and they're still hearing all of these weird noises. And so, again, as you said, this is after the fact. So hopefully everyone had a great 4th of July, and everyone is safe and at home.
So at home, if in that scenario, you can try to distract your pet with maybe television or radio to kind of drown out some of that background boom, boom going on. Maybe get them in a small enclosed environment. A lot of pets like to get in the bottom of a closet, under a bed, under a favorite blanket, makes them feel secure.
Mm-hmm.
Medications, if you can think ahead of time, and if you know your pet has anxiety issues, then we're using more and more gabapentin for cats. We're using a ton of trazodone in dogs because it works quicker and it doesn't have to be on board every day. And then Prozac or fluoxetine, the active ingredient of Prozac, we've been using for 15 years or so just to kind of help pets get through some of these very stressful situations.
There's a little bit of alprazolam too for certain pets, but one thing I was going to mention that most people, it's very old school, but we don't really use it at all anymore, thankfully, but that's acepromazine. More like a tranquilizer, and typically when your dog is fearful, it actually can bring on more aggression.
Yeah, very unpredictable. We still, in the practice, use acepromazine every day. It's one of our major components in our medley of pre-medications that we give. Small doses of a lot of different drugs are much better than, you know, big doses of one or two drugs. And so it is in our typically in our pre-med concoction, if you will. Even after surgery, we have some pets that are super anxious, and we will oftentimes give that and or other drugs just to kind of help calm them. So it's all about balance for us.
But that's injectable versus like a tablet that you're going to give your dog if it's scared.
I haven't prescribed an acepromazine tablet in over 20 years because it just doesn't work.
Right.
It doesn't work. So that was one of the stories I was going to talk about.
Acepromazine or 4th of July?
No, July 4th. Yeah, you know, the only pet we currently have at the house is Solomon the snake, and there were a lot of fireworks going off last night, and he seemed to tolerate that just fine. Did not seem to affect him at all.
He was still able to eat his mice.
Yeah, yeah. So, snakes.
So, let's talk about snakes. So, I am not a fan of scaled creatures anyways, but I've always wondered, and there certainly are people, and they do feel like they make great companions. But in your house, what is Solomon's role? Is he there to like instill chores in your children? Like, what was the thought of getting a snake? And
probably
him
that
into
was
your home?
Part of it early on. I mean, we've had fish, we've had frogs, we've had turtles. We haven't really, I don't recall ever having like small mammals, pocket pets, or birds, but pretty much everything else.
Have you guys had a cat? No.
Yes, but not with the children. Maybe Murray. Yeah, Murray actually did move to Gwinnett County with us, and then he developed a meningioma. We had rescued him from the specialty practice that Mary worked at. As far as he was, he used to be their clinic cat, and he would roam around the lobby, and then whenever he started swatting and biting at people in the lobby, he had to be rehomed. And so fortunately for us, that was us. But no, that's the last cat I've had, and that's been quite a while then, probably 18 years.
Yeah. So dogs and then scaly creatures.
Scaly creatures, yeah, which I'm not a fan of. I do not want to be within 6 feet of that snake.
That's interesting. So bearded dragons are like a thing right now.
Yeah.
It's very popular to have a bearded dragon. People dress them up. They take them for walks, all kinds of things. And I'm assuming that these people are obviously getting something back from the dragon.
I guess.
I just don't know.
Do they interact? Do they play with them? Or are they more on display? So I was at Appalachian Ridge yesterday, and I walked into the office and saw the bearded dragon there.
Monkey.
And just kind of like, oh, my gosh, not my thing. So I don't know.
But plenty of our staff have bearded dragons.
I guess. I don't know.
I will tell you for sure they do as pets, right? Obviously. But yeah, it's just interesting. So I was curious as to why you brought a snake in your house. But
yeah,
so
not my decision.
Solomon.
Is the official answer there. So he is a ball python, non-poisonous. Doesn't matter. He's still a snake. A snake is a snake to me.
Yeah.
So whether it's a king snake, a rattlesnake, a ball python, a garden snake, I remember years ago, I'm driving down the road next to Hebron, their elementary school, and a guy is parked, leaving his house to get on the blacktop road, and he stops, and I, as I'm passing him, he reaches down in, we used to call it the bar ditch in Texas, but I think it's just the ditch is what you call it, and he gets this big, long black snake. That thing must have been 10 feet long, and he's pulling it to get it. It's starting to go on the road. He's getting it, and he's throwing it back into his yard. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Let it go.
I'm
Let
not a
go.
Big snake fan either. Anyways, I think we talked about snakes not too long ago, about those that are indigenous here in Georgia with the copperheads and that kind of thing.
Yep.
I do not know my snake species at all. So, like, if I see a snake, I'm very much like you. Like, it's a snake. It's scary. Like, let it make it leave me alone.
All right, so that's a good segue into talking a little bit about the whole Belize trip.
Yes, so eager to hear much about it.
I didn't know much at all about Belize, really, until I got there. I did not research the country. My family, mainly Asher, my oldest son, kind of planned that out and helped figure out what we're going to do. We did some stuff on the fly. It wasn't all pre-planned. But I really had to kind of, you know, look on the map to see where is it at, and it's basically south of Mexico. You know, what are the border states? There's Honduras to the east.
Countries.
Guatemala to the south.
Yeah, it's very Central America.
So very much Central America on the Caribbean. Over 300 little islands, like 30 minutes out to the east. And then that's right where
In the Gulf side.
On the Gulf side, that's where the Great Barrier Reef is. And I forget how long this thing is. It's like 130 miles long.
Is it the Great Barrier Reef? Because I thought that was Australia.
Okay, it's not that one, but this could be the largest reef in the world. If not, it's the second.
Okay.
Again, I didn't know all this. And so I'll get to this back to the snake in a minute, but first day we got there, we got settled, no big deal. Second day, we decided to book a kind of a fun snorkeling trip. And so we had this local guide, his name was Ash, ironically, kind of like Asher, come pick us up at the little resort area we were staying in. We get on this little bitty blue boat. We start taking off across the ocean. I'm kind of nervous because there's quite a few waves, but we wind up going on a guided snorkeling tour.
Mm-hmm.
And so we go out to South Island or something like that, and we get off. It's a beautiful beach. There are these huge boats with hundreds of snorkelers on them and scuba divers on them. So there's all these guided things going on. And so we just hop off on the beach. We put our flippers on. We get our snorkeling mask, and we just jump in and walk out and start snorkeling on this reef.
It doesn't make you nervous at all to go into water that you're not familiar with?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because it does me. I really enjoy snorkeling. We snorkel whenever we go to the Caribbean, but it always makes me very nervous. Like, I want to know, like, what is
water scares me. I'm not super comfortable. What's underneath? What's going to happen when you're in the water? Completely out of my element.
Okay.
For sure. And so my family had bought these complete facial covering mm-hmm. snorkel mask. And they're like, oh, they're great. We brought three. This is awesome. You don't have to worry about, you know, breathing through your mouth and not your nose. And I'm like, okay.
And you can go underwater with those.
And you can go underwater and the water mm-hmm. doesn't come in.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll try that. I put it on. I'm like, okay, that's great. So we take off on this 50-minute continuous snorkel with these long flippers on.
You didn't practice with this mask.
I had not practiced at all.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that.
So I can get a little claustrophobic in certain situations. And I had this mask on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're face down in the water, the breathing tube's up, we're kicking around, we're going around. Every time the guide sees a fish, he comes to the surface. And so we come to the surface and he's like, oh, this is the yellow-bellied sapsucker, or whatever the fish's name is. Some fish I'd never heard of, right?
Is that a real thing, a yellow-bellied sapsucker?
That is, but that's like a bird. He's talking about these weird different fish, and we're, you know, we're coming up and breathing. And so about like 10 minutes into it, I'm like, man, I'm getting kind of wiggy here. So when we would come up, I took it off for a couple of times to kind of have some deep breaths. So I did that. And on the third time, when I put my mask back on, I was getting a little winded. I started breathing really hard and heavy, and the little stop clock valve stopped, and I breathed in. It was negative pressure. And I breathed in again, and it's negative pressure. So I ripped the mask off, and then the guy says, are you okay, Pops? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. So anyway, I finally calmed down and I figured out it was different.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's different when you breathe through your mouth versus breathe through your nose, because I'm down there, I'm huffing and puffing, and I'm hearing this reverberation, you know, the little ball going, And so I finally, about 30 minutes into it, figure out, well, that's because I'm breathing through my mouth, not my nose. And so I start to relax. And meanwhile, the boys, they're diving deep, you know, and the bubbles are coming up. I'm doing all I can, just struggling on the top of the water, trying to stay off the coral, because I know that's bad. You're not supposed to touch it.
Very, very bad.
And so we're hovering over it. You know, I start sinking. So I almost lose a flipper twice. So we get done with it. I could, walking up the surf to get on the beach, my legs were jello. And I'm stumbling around. I feel like I have run 3 marathons, whatever that feels like.
That's
and so
funny.
That it was super fun. It was super cool, but it was a little discomforting for me.
I think you should practice before you go into the ocean.
And, yeah, so I didn't do any other trips quite that long. And so that was cool. We went to another little island. Mary and the boys snorkeled around. I chose to stay on land with Hannah that time because, yeah, fool me once. Shame on you. But, yeah, anyway, whatever that saying is. So real quickly, second day, we decided – actually, we'd already booked a fishing trip with the same guide. And so we go back out to the reef, and he's like, do you want to hand fish or do you want to fish with the rod and reel? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he shows us these lines of fishing line, like you buy, you're out the
like
black
a reel.
Plastic.
Yeah. It's not on a rod, it's just a reel.
It's just a reel. And there's a hook on it, and there's a weight, which is a spark plug.
Oh, you're kidding.
And so I look at the rods. They've got spark plugs on them. And he's like, yeah, I don't buy weights. I go down to the local mechanic and I get their used spark plugs. They work great. And so he basically says, you know, you're going to put this piece of fish on it. We're about 40 feet from surface to bottom. You're going to slowly put the line out. You're going to feel it hit the bottom.
So what type of fish are you fishing for?
They were like this big.
Okay, so like 12 inches long?
So they were like 12 to 16 inch long fish, and there were 3 or 4 types, and they completely escaped me right now.
Okay.
But if you could find like the drop off to the reef, that was like the perfect spot. And this is all visual, right? There's no
fish technology.
Finders.
Yeah. Yep,
no, this is all visual.
Yeah.
And a couple of times, in fact, our guide Ash I look over, he's putting his snorkel mask on. He's got getting his flippers on. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm going to go scope out the fish. And so he's like, oh, hand me that. And I reach up. I'm like, a reel? He's like, no, hand me my spear gun. I'm like, okay. So while we're fishing, he jumps off the boat. He's trying to see where are the fish. And he's also looking for bigger fish to use a spear gun on so that we could have more fish to eat.
That's so crazy.
So out in the middle of the ocean.
I've never seen a speared fish. Did he catch anything?
He caught a... Oh, gosh. I'll have to look it up. It's a real... It's not a barracuda, but a long silver fish that's pretty mean with a lot of teeth. It was probably 2 feet long.
That you eat?
We actually ate that for lunch that day. Mm. So anyway, we hand fished. The minute it would hit the bottom, you would feel just a little bit of a nibble, and you would jerk as hard as you could. It took me and the boys a little time to figure it out.
So you just now are jerking, like,
so
fishing line back
feeling,
up?
You're feeling of it in your hands.
Yeah, but like,
so
that
minute,
seems like it would cut your hands.
But these are little bitty fish. These aren't 20-pound fish.
I guess.
And so the minute you would jerk it, and as you're pulling it up, a lot of times you don't even know if you've got a fish because they're swimming towards you and they're not very big.
Mm.
But we bucketed 50 or 60 fish that morning.
Wow.
And so we went to an island called Bread and Butter Island, where he frequents. He knows kind of the caretaker that stays on that island. And it was really pretty. Maybe we'll post some pictures. And they wound up cooking us grilled fish that they stuffed with butter and herbs and kind of like a pico de gallo type of mixture.
Very cool.
So it was really, really fun. So that was awesome. Day 3.
We're going to get back to the snake story, though,
We're getting to the snake story.
All right.
Day 3, we go on a cocoa, C-O-C-O-A, bean farm tour and chocolate making experience.
Okay.
So the cocoa bean is the bean that chocolate is made from. It grows in this funky little pod that comes off usually the trunk of the tree, not the branches. It blooms really weird. It's just a really completely something I never dreamed of because I've never researched it.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't been quite that interested, but it was super interesting. So we go to this farm. We actually taste the cocoa beans, the outside of them. It's like a sour mango, slimy, white nastiness. and then we go across the street. We learn how to make chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had no clue. I thought I knew that like the bitterness of chocolate came from this bean, but I'm like, you've got to process it and mix it with stuff to make chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the truth is they take the bean out of the pod or whatever you call it. They dry it for 7 to 8 days and then they roast it. So there's this whole, no, I'm sorry. For 7 to 8 days, it ferments in its own juices. And then for like another 7 days, they dry it all laid out and then they roast it. And then they typically will make these little nibs, which those are really good. You can like sprinkle over ice cream. You get that bitterness of the chocolate. So you can eat that and it tastes just like dark, bitter chocolate. But the cool thing is they had this grinding stone and they took these little nibs and they it's kind of like a mortar pestle, but bigger. And it's more like a paint tray, like a roller tray. And then the roller would be this big stone. And so they put all these nibs in there and they start just grinding with this stone. And all of a sudden, after like 2 minutes, you're like, wow, it's starting to smell like chocolate in here. And then the guy stops and you go up and look and he literally just made chocolate simply by grinding the beans, the nibs.
So is it like a liquid underneath? It's like a pasty?
So there's oil. There's oil in the bean. And so you basically can make that chocolate that way. And then depending on how much sugar you add back into it, you know, that's, I think we made like an 85% chocolate to 15% sugar, and it was still super, super bitter.
You know, I like a really bitter chocolate.
Well, you would have liked it. I enjoyed it just because it was different.
Yeah.
So anyway, we sat there and everybody ground the chocolate and we you know, he asked what percentage. Oh, let's make 85%. He's like, I like mine darker. No, let's do 85. That's good. So he then took the liquid, mixed in the sugar, poured it in these little plastic trays, molds.
Like a bar.
Stuck it in the freezer and we talked for another 15 minutes, took it out and our chocolate was made.
That's pretty cool.
So I totally thought it was going to be a very lame experience. I thought, you know, this is going to be so boring, but it was really, really cool. All right, now getting to the snake story.
Okay. So is this day three still? Or
this is still that day. Okay. So at that point, we got with our guide, William, and we went into the Jaguar National Preserve.
Reserve.
Not
so preserve. I talked about this. I was hopeful that you guys would go and try to see some wildlife, seeing that you and your wife are both veterinarians, although I know your kids really don't have the same interest, and so I was hopeful.
So we were told and read that you're extremely unlikely to see a jaguar.
Okay.
They're night creatures, right, and they're sleeping during the day.
Sure.
So on the trip...
But like the waterfall in the reserve are supposed to be beautiful.
It's supposed to be beautiful, and it was. So it's a rainforest, right, that we went into. This was the second of three that we went into. So we go on this 2 mile hike to a waterfall.
Is it a rainforest or a jungle? What's the difference? It's
very similar in this case. I forget how many inches of rain, over 300 inches of rain a year, I think that they get.
Okay.
And just pop-up showers anywhere. But I think it's the same to me. I don't know the difference, but okay. I would use them synonymously.
Okay.
So we start off on this 2 mile in hike to a waterfall, and he's like, it's very beautiful, but it's not very big. So back up on the van ride to the reserve. Somebody says, oh, do y'all have a lot of snakes in Belize? Oh yeah, we have over however many species, but only 8 are poisonous. And they're usually not very aggressive. They're not very, you know, quote unquote, bad. You almost have to step on them to make them bite you.
Oh, gosh.
And so we're like, oh, okay. So that's not, yeah, you don't really have to worry about them. They're not going to be hanging off the trees or vines or anything. And so we get to where we're going. We have a little bit of a snack. We start our hike. And so we're going in and he's showing us these big termite colonies hanging off colonies. He said, yeah, if you ever get lost in the jungle, stick your finger in, let the termites come on, and then you can eat them. So Asher and Jared ate some termites, and they're like, oh, wow, they taste like carrots. Try some, Dad. I'm like, no, thank you. I'm good.
So actual termites, not grub.
Actual termites.
But like termites.
So, yeah. So that's a good source of protein. So we're walking along, and he's like, oh, see this mark in the ground? That's where a jaguar has been covering up its poop or urine, kind of covering its track. Oh, that's cool. We walk up a little bit longer, and he's like, smell that musty odor. Jaguar's been by here not too long ago. And right now I'm like, oh my gosh, this is getting a little too close for me because, I mean, there's a trail.
But you guys are actively walking out there, right?
Actively walking.
Does he have a gun, like in case something were to happen?
Nope. And then we see the little leaf-cutting ants, the ones that go to a tree, and then for miles they bring them back to their colony. So we saw tons of those. That was pretty cool. We were careful to try
like
to not
step cartoons,
on those.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. So that was cool. And so it's a neat little hike. I forget what else we saw. Some birds. We hear some birds.
Did you see any toucans?
No. And I asked somebody about that a couple of days later at another place we were. And he said, it's their nesting time right now. So they're in the nest taking care of their young, gotcha. Unless they're looking for food, but you're not going to see any. I also asked about the tapir that Dr. Reese,
the cattle,
the national animal of Belize.
Mm-hmm.
And, Greg, one of our guides, said, yeah, you're not going to see many here. I think he said they're more northern Belize.
Okay.
So we get to the, I know it's a long snake story. We get to the waterfall. We had worn our swimsuits, so we kind of took our clothes off, and Jared gets in. He's like, oh, it's cold. And I get in. I'm like, yeah, it's cold. Mary's kind of getting Hannah to where she can wade around in it. Our guide, William, kind of goes off to the left. I drew you a little picture here. So here's the waterfall. Here's a rock. Here's where we get in. Our guide goes over here to sit on the left bank. And so Mary, Jared, I don't know what Asher's doing. He wasn't in at that point. Mary, Jared, and myself are in the pond, and the waterfall is up here.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, go underneath it, Jared. And he's like, I don't feel too comfortable. I don't know what's back there. It's kind of weird. You can't touch the bottom, and it's just a real rocky bottom. And so we're stumbling around, talking about how cold it is. There's a rock right in the center, and I was kind of walking back towards the bank to talk to Asher and Hannah, and I'm like, hey, Mary, watch that rock. I don't want you to trip over it. You can't see it this way. And all of a sudden, the guide yells out, watch out. And I'm like, oh, he's telling her to watch out for the rock. That's kind of weird. Go, get out, watch out, get out of the water. We look up and see this creature swimming through the water at us rapidly. And it's a snake. It's a yellow jaw.
Okay, wait. Back up. So you guys are like, we're enjoying
the waterfall pool.
Pond at the end of this waterfall. So waterfall's over to your left, over to your right. There's like a bank. This is where your guide is. There's a rock in the center, and you guys are just kind of waiting around.
Oh, this is fun. It's so beautiful here in the middle of the jungle, out in the middle of nowhere. And the guide starts yelling, watch out. No real. And Jared's like, I thought he was joking. And he's like, get out of the water, snake.
But, like, for real, he was, like, yelling, panicked.
Yeah, he wasn't panicked. I wish he would have been more panicked. I was panicked. So I'm like, oh, he's telling us to look the water. And I look over and I see this yellow jaw, which the official name is Fur de Lance. Or you could just type yellow jaw Belize snake, and it will show you this snake. And so this snake is swimming through the water right towards Mary and Jared.
Oh, wow.
She panics. He kind of panics. I panic. I go to give her a hand to pull her out of the water. The snake is still swimming. I start slapping water at it. I grab her hand. I pull her. It veers a little to the bank, and then it goes back to underneath the waterfall.
Mm.
I'm like, Jared, get out. He starts walking. All of a sudden, the snake starts coming from the waterfall back towards them. We're all panicking. I mean, it scares the bejeebies out of all of us. We finally get to the bank at the entry point.
So how big is this pond? Is it like a swimming pool size?
It's maybe 10 by 20.
Okay.
Going back. Rough rocks underneath. So again, you can't walk. It's not sure footing.
Mm-hmm.
So we are getting out of there as quick as we can. The snake comes back and doubles back around again, and then does go up those rocks. So at this point, I'm hyperventilating. I'm like, let's get the you-know-what out of here.
So he goes up the rocks that were in
the
middle?
Goes up the rocks
where
overlooking
you guys were in the
pond.
Okay.
And so I get Mary out. I get Jared out. I'm on the banks. I'm like, let's get our shoes on. Let's get the heck out of here. Like, I'm done at that point. William says, oh, no, he's up on the bank over there. Something must have been chasing him. And I'm like, well, it looked like he was chasing us to me. And so we kind of quickly get our clothes on. I pull Hannah out of the water really quickly. She kind of freaks out because I startle her. So
the William guy, your guy at this point, he's like, no need to stress.
Oh, he's not stressed at all. He comes over as we're getting our clothes on. And as we're talking on the way back, as we're in the vehicle, the conversation is kind of like, well, thank you, Will. You know, Mary's like, thank you, William, for telling us a snake was coming right at us. And I'm thinking, yeah, thanks, William. You didn't do anything to protect us. Like, and I don't know what he could have done other than had he had a gun or whatnot. And he says,
you wouldn't have wanted him to shoot at a snake in the water.
So he says, well, yeah, I was telling y'all, yeah, the snakes can't strike in the water because they're swimming. They can't reach back and strike. And that's what I was telling you. Don't let him get on you. Don't let him get on you. And I'm thinking, I didn't hear that at all. I'm hearing, get out of the water, there's a snake. Oh yeah, no, I was telling him, he got on you, push him off. And again, I'm like, I'm not doing this. And so he said, oh yeah, well, lucky we didn't get bit. This is like the deadliest snake in Belize.
Oh my gosh. This snake
accounts for more deaths, which it's only about 10% of the people that get bitten by it.
Only
10% that die.
Okay.
And he says,
sounds like COVID numbers, but still enough to be worried.
And he says, oh yeah, I mean, if you had gotten bit, we'd have to be airlifted to the hospital in Dangriga. And that cost $20,000. I'm like, well, I'm thinking that would have been worth it, you know, but how are we going to get out of the jungle to get back to be airlifted out of here? Oh yeah, y'all were lucky. That's one of the deadliest ones. That one's bad. That one's bad. And I'm like, seriously?
Does this make you want to go back and
tromp
through the jungle anymore?
So we were pretty freaked out for a while. And I'm thinking like that, it was from me to you when I reached back to get Mary and it's going like this. It was, I'm sure it wasn't looking to attack us, mm-hmm. you know, looking back. But oh my gosh, made you tremble in your boots had you been wearing them.
Yeah, it sounds pretty scary. So you guys did not have water shoes on or anything. So you're walking on these rocks and that sounds terrifying.
Yeah. So just a little research. I mean, you can look it up if you're listening. You know, it's something like, I forget how many, I think it milligrams of venom it usually injects into you. It's like 150 up to 300. You can die after 50.
Oh, wow.
You know, most, right? So less than 50% of people die. Some people have to have their legs amputated where they get bit. You know, it's all dependent on all these factors.
Oh, my.
So, yeah, that was kind of a close encounter. That was a close encounter.
So that sounds pretty terrifying. And so I will tell you that it sounds like you were in a jungle because I did look up the difference. Because when I told everyone last week that you and your family were going to Belize, I had said that on, you know, one side of the country, it is basically like shoreline with the Atlantic there, mm-hmm. the Gulf. The other is all jungle.
And so that's more rainforest under that canopy there.
So the definition on, I guess, what's
this
the
This is our two words of the week, jungle versus rainforest.
Yeah, but this is, I just Googled it. And so apparently it pulled up the most popular here. And so it's called whatsthediff.org, just FYI. It says that a rainforest, like a jungle, is filled with thick vegetation, but unlike a jungle, it has a layer of tall trees called a canopy that blocks out most of the sunlight. So while jungles have a ton of stuff happening below your feet, rainforests don't. Most of the action in a rainforest happens in the trees.
Maybe. I know they were talking about a big hurricane that wiped out one area of the rainforest along the Monkey River, and it took down all the big trees, and when that happened, all the undergrowth really, like, it came back so thick, and there's not this big canopy. So, yeah.
So there's a canopy in a rainforest, and there's not in a jungle, is basically what I understand.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So it says.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll believe you.
So this whole yellow tail, yellow mouth?
Yellow jaw. Yellow jaw.
Yellow jaw.
Fur de lance. Pretty terrifying. Pretty terrifying. But we powered through it. We went on another river, Monkey River, kind of a cruise, which was really cool, going in and out of the mangrove super fast. And
went, you guys were in a boat, though, it sounds like.
Yeah,
not
and then
in the water.
We were not in the water again, except in the swimming pool. And then did another little jungle hike, saw howler monkeys on two occasions. Very
okay.
cool. Saw this really weird blue crab on the last little jungle tour that we took. I've got videos of that, so that would be something cool to kind of look up. Overall, very fun, but I was very much ready to get back to the States. So,
yeah, foreign countries can definitely do that to you.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, all right, I think we probably don't have, I didn't have many stories to talk about any ways other, yeah, I didn't have really anything to talk about except people are continuing to realize that people can transmit COVID to pets and they're studying that, but these pets are not getting sick with it.
Yeah, so I saw that as well. I guess 3 days ago, like some university in Ontario published something that there's a high percentage of cats, especially if the cat lives
more so than dogs, yeah.
Mm-hmm, if the cat stays in the bed with the owner, but to your point, they may be
asymptomatic. Yeah.
Yeah, they may have some of the, I guess, disease, if you will, or some of those cells or molecules when they're tested, but they're not symptomatic.
So another fun fact is in Belize, it is federal law that you have to wear a mask in public places, including walking along the side of the road.
Interesting.
$500 Belize fine if you're not wearing a mask. Out in the middle of nowhere, walking down the road, in the middle of the jungle.
That's crazy. So you said 2 to 1, so it's 250 American dollars?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, but just opposite of the way we, you know, when we started opening back up, oh, out in public open air places, you can take a mask off if you're not vaccinated.
You had said something about that country is kind of like on the fence about vaccines. So majority of them are not vaccinated.
Not over 50%.
Yeah.
Many believe in, you know, herbal medicine and don't believe in vaccine. I heard, you know, one of our first guides was definitely an anti-vaccinator.
Interesting.
So, but yeah, my fear is they feel like they're being protected. And if they wind up getting, by doing these things, right, by isolating themselves, and I thought this for the U.S. as well, you either need to be vaccinated or you're probably going to get it unless you're holed up, you know, completely isolated.
Sure.
And hopefully most of them will get vaccinated so they don't have a big outbreak. But I do think some of these smaller countries and areas, we are going to continue to see that just because of that very reason. They're not protected, and it's just a ticking time bomb.
Interesting.
Just my thoughts.
One more story before we kind of head out, and I guess this podcast is going to be a little bit longer, which I guess is fine because mine last week was a little bit shorter. But the day before you left on the 25th, right? And just the day before you left, so there was a Surfside condo in Miami had collapsed.
Yep.
Had you read anything about this?
Yes, I kind of heard about that, and I think there's 20 people found dead and still...
I think the total right now is 24. Nobody has been pulled out of the rubble alive since like a day or two after it collapsed. Yeah, so I wanted to talk about a couple of things. One, so they now have search and rescue dogs out there. So they have like Florida Task Force 1, Task Force 2. They have Ohio, Indiana, all these other essentially search and rescue teams.
So we're about 10 days out, right? I mean, roughly.
It happened on the 24th, and so now today's the 4th, yeah. But so they have all these people out there, there's these search and rescue dogs. And so I thought it was interesting because remember when we went to the 2019 Hero Dog Awards, there were some search and rescue dogs mm-hmm. in the categories, there as well. It's pretty crazy what these dogs do, but they definitely learn sense and that kind of thing. But there are two different distinct categories is my understanding. They have life find dogs and they have cadaver dogs.
That makes sense. So, it's different, right? I mean,
yeah,
we've seen the movies, the series, the shows where dead bodies are found and grazed by dogs, I guess, marking them by sitting on the spot.
Yeah. So I guess these dogs, again, they're not digging through the rubble, right? I can only mm-hmm. imagine what a collapse of 12 yeah. stories looks like and how deep that rubble is.
Yeah.
But the dogs apparently are trying to help, the search and rescue teams
find
the spaces or the locations and somewhat eliminate others so that they okay. can get their efforts faster. If that makes sense.
If somebody was fortunate enough to be in kind of a pocket, we're starting to get to the point where they may not make it, but I think within the next 3 to 5 days, they probably still could.
Yeah.
But so, the risk of like kidney failure because they don't have water, food is not the issue. It's my understanding. It's the whole hydration.
Well, and especially down in Miami where the temperatures mm-hmm. are super hot, but that's an interesting point, right? So like a couple of more days, but search and rescue as of today or tomorrow is actually being halted. So there's a big tropical storm that they're expecting to come in, and so they are planning to demo the rest of the condo, which I think is pretty terrifying. So at least
they're not going to try to pick things apart and find people dead or alive. They're gonna implode the other standing, and then just.
I believe they're going to try to demo the rest of the building, and so my understanding, and this is the scary part, is that they had people evacuate. These are condos, right? This is not like a you go here for a day and you leave, like a hotel. People lived here.
Right.
People Airbnb'd, so people brought their pets here. People had their families here. There were definitely deceased children that were found in the rubble. I recently read that there was a cat that was found kind of walking through the rubble, and no one really knows like if it's a local cat, if it's a cat from the condo. that kind of thing. But it got me thinking that there likely are pets in that rubble as well. And then there are obviously those people that had to evacuate if they evacuated without their pets, you know, in a haste, because as we know, like, human life pretty much always comes first.
But there's always a story like the floods in Houston. I'm remembering, you know, the dogs on a rooftop, or the rescuers, you know, mm-hmm. going by boat to a house to rescue the dogs. And so, but I was going to say, unfortunately, the reality is we love our pets and they are super important. Yeah. But under a lot of situations, they do become a little bit of a secondary thought,
it's kind of like a sad story to end with, but yet it's also super great because we have these dogs out there that their scent is so much more keen than any human, but yet we also have the fact that, like, we appreciate these dogs and we're going to utilize them, but yet we also have pets that aren't being sought after as well. And I think the mayor, or the city mayor, I guess, of Miami had to come out and basically tell people, like, we're making efforts to find everyone we can, and if we find pets along the way, you know, like, the efforts are there, but that's not what the intent was for.
That's not the focus.
Yes. So
you would think that they would have some type of picker apparatus to grab debris, you know, and move it off and just really work around the clock to extract all of this rubble, but I know that's easier said than done.
Yeah, but also, like, what are they going to do with it?
Well,
right?
They just need to move it. I don't know how big the site is.
And then, well, so it's 12 stories.
Right,
think of it that way.
Like, big diameter, you know,
well,
how much
only
rubble.
A portion of the condo collapsed, right? So which is why they're going to demo the other portion. I don't know how big it is either, but I can only imagine it's quite substantial. And I know nothing about, like, if you move one piece of rubble, kind of think of it
Search
like Jenga.
Rescue,
Think of it like Jenga. You move one piece and, like, what happens to the rest?
Yeah.
And so if there is somebody alive down there and they move a piece, are they running the risk? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's why they don't move these things.
They know more than I do for sure.
Yeah.
I'm certain.
Anyways, as we say, we always try to talk about things that are current in the news. And this is definitely both in the news and animal related. So I wanted to for sure bring it up.
Okay. Very good. Well, y'all look up the Fertilance, and it doesn't look that terrifying in the pictures, but...
I don't know. It looks like a snake to me.
Snake in the water, no matter what kind of snake, is usually not a good thing for me to see.
A snake in the water that can climb up the rocks. That sounds pretty terrifying, no matter which way you look at it.
We'll post a picture. So as we're getting ready to hike out, William's over there sitting on a rock with his monocular looking at... And he's like, oh, there he is. And so we take I took a picture across the rocks, but it was too far to be very clear, and so we took a picture through his monocular, and it's much more clear to where you can see the head of the snake and maybe the first 10-12 inches of it.
Crazy.
So we'll post a couple Belize pictures with Rhonda's help.
Perfect. All right, guys, check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at People Pets and Vets. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And make sure to download or subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening to it. Finally, remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.